Hello, welcome to Diversity in Research. My name is Lachlan Smith.
And I am Jakob Felfast Christensen. Welcome back for season 8 of the podcast. And as you can perhaps hear in Lachlan's background, spring has sprung. There are birds chirping, there.
Just about.
And so we will kick this season off with a solo episode, or at least the two of us just waffling. We will cover the case where that took place in the last 6 months in the UK that found an immediate end in November, covering Science Secretary Donnellan and the UKRI and a lot of other things. We'll go into it and we will explain why this should be important for everybody around the world and not just people in the UK, because it's a case about the politicization of EDI and research, and shows a potential playbook that we could see in other countries as well. So we'll try and explain a bit about the case, what happened, a bit of the timeline, and the impact of it, both, first of all, of course, in the UK, and then finally, we will have a bit of a chat about why this is relevant, as I said, internationally, and why we should be slightly concerned about what we saw happening. Should we start with a bit of the timeline about what happened? Do you, Absolutely. Or should I try and explain what happened in October?
Yeah, well, the shortest version possible is that I think UKRI established a equality, diversity and inclusion panel to help oversee the work that they do. So that's UK research and innovation, for people who don't know. And the panel hasn't actually been around for that long. It had been fairly recently established. It kind of blends in a little bit with the work that's been going on around research culture here in the UK. It had a fairly broad remit looking at EDI issues. And in its early life, the first few months, it was, I guess, in many respects, very uncontentious. It was just, it was there and it was starting to work. And then things changed very quickly when Hamas did their attack in Israel on October the 7th. Obviously, the world has changed significantly since then. Media coverage exploded around that attack, that horrendous attack. And one of the members of the committee, and you're going to remind me of their name, sent a tweet.
Kate Tseng. Yeah, two members sent out tweets about this, yeah.
Yeah, and the tweets... I was just going to say, the tweets were... Well, one of the tweets was certainly a response to an article which had been published, I think in The Guardian here in the UK, where they were expressing some support for... expressing dismay, I guess, at what had happened. And the UK Science Secretary, Michelle Donnellan, wasn't happy about the tweet, felt that the tweet from this academic was showing support for Hamas and what they'd done on October 7th. And very quickly, the Science Secretary asked that the EDI panel as a whole be dissolved, and that the academics in question are investigated for their tweets. Were they anti-Semitic? Were they pro-Hamas? Were they pro-terrorist organization, which Hamas is? And things became very fractious very quickly, and I'll let you pick up where we went from there.
Yeah. And I think it's because the UKRI and Ottolina Leiser, who is in charge there, followed the Science Secretary Donilon, and as you said, dissolved the panel, which of course made a lot of people angry who will have their back. I would say perhaps she was in a bit between a rock and a hard place. I'm not sure she had other options really as a government agency, but anyway, it created a lot of discussion. And so this is of course important because this happens at a time where, as we talked about in the last season, where you have the REF, the Research Excellence Framework, where the UKRI has said that next time their institution will be measured on research culture. You can go back and listen to why we think that is absolutely a good idea. We had an episode on why indicators in research culture is a good thing. Anyway, so there is this whole EDI frame happening in the UK, and we have seen these consistent attacks on these things. The Conservative government attacked the idea of research culture measures in REF. And you have also seen attacks on transgender persons, in particular named transgender persons in research as well. So we see there is this whole, this isn't a standalone incident or a standalone topic. It very much has to be seen in a context. Anyway, just to say, there was a lot of discussion. People stepped down from the EGI panel and from other panels under UKRI. People expressed their concern about who had their back, etc., etc. And then here in March, there was the result of the investigation came out that, as expected, said that those tweets were not pro-Hamas. They were not pro-terrorism or anti-Semitic. And there has been a settlement where Donilon, or the government on behalf of Secretary Donilon, has paid a settlement of £15,000 to one of the researchers, Kate Sang, that sued Donilon for defamation. And we should also say that the investigation as well has been paid by the government. So this has landed at a £38,000 bill for the British people. And she also had to excuse, and she did kind of a non-excuse, I would say. And the diversity panel was reinstated. And here is important to say again that a lot of people, or some of the members, had stepped down. So this is, and this was, we're recording this on April 1st, so we can't say it was last month, but basically it's more like 2 weeks ago or something like that. But if we go back into this, look at this, look at the wider impact of this, because it's easy to see this as a single case and look at the expenses for the people, for the £38,000, and what happened with Secretary Donilon. But there is a wider impact that we should perhaps take a look at. Could you say, what are your thoughts on what this impact could be?
Yeah, and I think there's lots of different sort of levels to this impact, isn't there? I mean, if you were to take the really, really big picture, there's a question around, government interference in research and in what research bodies do. And there's always been a very strong principle in the UK that the government, essentially should stay out of those matters, that they're not the right people to be influencing research. And you may argue that an EDI panel is not influencing research, but the fact is that the EDI panel was instituted to ensure that issues around equality and diversity in research were taken into account, which, if you listen to any of our episodes in the past, you'll understand does influence research and what is research, what research is undertaken, what research is funded, and things like that. So there is a direct direct clash there, where the government and the Secretary of State for Science, you know, very publicly intervened. So at that level, it feels uncomfortable and it feels problematic. But then there's lots of spin-offs from that, because as we've discussed, quite a lot of people stood down from their involvement in UKRI initiatives. So not just the EDI panel, but lots of people stood down from being on review panels for grants, sitting on other academic panels that are convened by UKRI. And that's one impact. But then the next impact on top of that is then, well, what's the incentive for people to then sign up and engage in these processes, in these committees, to be part of these conversations, be they public or private conversations around EDI, around research, when this is the kind of potential backlash that that could be seen? And it plays straight into questions around social media. And we've talked about social media. We've had people like Mark Harrigan on before to talk about, you know, the role of social media in research, because a lot of this blew up because of academics talking about or retweeting on social media. So there's a huge number of complex knock-ons from here, just from one tweet and the government intervention. And I'm sure there'll be others which I haven't thought of, but that's just a snapshot from me.
Yeah. And then it is, of course, as you said, how will research producing institutions interpret these initiatives? How will they proceed? Because one thing is what governments do or the actors in this in this field does, but there's also the individual institutions. When you risk suddenly having a research secretary calling you out and calling for investigations, where will this end and where does it? Does it begin? And then, of course, as you also said, how does people in the sector, and particularly people with minority identities, interpret this and act? Do they feel safe here when you can suddenly tweet something and then you're under attack from the science secretary? And let's guess that these two researchers, it didn't stop there. They will probably have experienced personal attacks afterwards based on that. And this is where it becomes a bit conspiracy theory. I can hear myself when I say this, but sometimes you can just, it feels like when you read the initial tweet that Secretary Donnellan referred back to, you don't need a PhD degree to say, no, that's not an expression of sympathy for terrorism. So you can't help but be left with the feeling that what's the aim of it all to begin with? Did she actually know that this wouldn't end with it being dissolved or these people being sued for terrorist sympathies or anything like that? Was it to obfuscate, to create this feeling of insecurity? Because as we said, what sort of EDI initiatives will be initiated at all levels in the sector based on this? And I think that is a real concern, particularly as I'm not British, so I don't really care about the £38,000. Okay, as you live in the UK, that's probably more of a concern for you. Yes. But as we said, but what concerns me or concerns us, I think, is that, and this is why it's so important to cover here, is that we see this on the political right, that we see this playbook being copied. Once someone does something on concerning EDI and minorities, and they succeed, you will see it copied elsewhere, like you have seen the success to some degree with attacks on transgender persons, particularly in the US. Now you see right-wing people all over Europe, including the UK, doing the same thing. And if this has this impact that we suggest it does, how will we see this play out in other countries? Because they are always searching for a playbook to cover.
Yeah, it's and worrying I was just going to say it's worrying that people that this probably will be replicated in other countries. There's a risk of this. The whole approach that the government is certainly taking here in the UK could very easily be replicated. But just one final point, which I guess we've touched on but not made explicit, is that because of what happened, and you sort of talked about minorities now, minorities will feel, and I think that's incredibly important, but I think it sort of almost goes beyond minorities as well, because there's a potential breakdown of trust between the researchers and the institutions which govern research, and I think that's really worrying as well. And that, and you probably don't have to be part of a minority to feel that. I think lots of people who are not necessarily parts of minorities would feel that as well.
Yeah. No. And I think you're absolutely right. And I would also say, if I was in the UKRIs of other countries, I would also be worried about what to do and how, because as we said, I'm not sure that they had that many other options in that case, being civil servants. And they can't just receive an open letter like that and say, fuck off. We trust them completely. That's not how politics. This is not how politics works. But yeah, so just create this immense insecurity, and through that, a lot of political control with an environment. At the same time, cases like this speak to certain parts of the electorate and feeds into the undermining trust in science, which is, of course, also a big problem, because there will certainly be people who still think that the result of the investigation is wrong and they should have been kicked out. And you can't trust all those left-leaning researchers and particularly people with a minority background who have all sorts of ideas about EDI. And as long as we, as politicians, can create that illusion, at least, they will build trust, and we will lose trust in science more broadly, which of course can be a goal in and of itself as well for some politicians. We don't agree, but I guess it is what it is. And then finally, I think it's important that we more broadly, because this will be, as we said, this will be copied elsewhere. You will see these things happen in other countries. And it's important that we learn how to deal with these situations without getting into a screaming competition, because that leads us nowhere. And we can't win those, no matter how much we insist that we are right. And we have to take it off social media. We can't win this on Twitter. And at some point, we have to learn how to do politics and policy. And I think that is what we have to. The main lesson from this to be learned is that we have to accept that science and research is also politics, and we have to play that game and learn how to be good at it, and not just insist on science-based policy, but actually say that science is policy and politics, and particularly EDI issues, unfortunately, are so politicized that if we want to change things, we have to go into politics, and we have to go into policy and do all that hard, boring, dirty work, because just producing papers and panels will simply won't be enough.
Exactly, and we've talked about this a lot. It's been a recurring theme, actually, if you go back over the previous seven seasons, that, you know, science and research is not done in a vacuum. You know, it's done within a political and economic and social context, and universities and perhaps researchers as well, but certainly institutions haven't been very good at understanding the politics and the context in which they sit and trying to operate effectively within that. And this, as you say, highlights beautifully how the two intersect. Beautifully, maybe isn't the right word, but it certainly highlights how they intersect and the consequences potentially of that intersection.
So I think it's, and I think that is why I think we have both paid a lot of attention to this case, and a thank you to Research Professional in particular for covering it extensively. And I really, really do hope that people will pay attention to these things, and we'll see, and that we will both at research producing institutions and other organizations in the ecosystem, and as researchers, we find better ways, because right now it seems like the easy thing is to be silent, get off Twitter, not tweeting anything, not doing, expressing any kind of interest, not sitting down or creating new expert panels on EDI or other things, and then they won.
Yeah, agreed.
So on that happy note, welcome back to season 8.
Yes.
Hopefully we will have happier episodes coming down the line. We have the first interviews lined up, and so we will see what comes, and we will have happier discussions. Not less relevant, but hopefully slightly happier at least.
Yes.
I think that was it, wasn't it?
I think that covers it.
So I think we'll just say thank you for listening today, and we look forward to season 8 and see what comes. So I'll read this out. The Diversity in Research podcast is a Diversity Unity production. It's produced and edited by Peter Chong. It's edited, co-hosted by Lachlan Smith and Jakob Philfus Christensen. You can follow us on Twitter at DivresPod. That's DivresPod. Remember to subscribe, like, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and share it with colleagues and friends. To learn more about our consultancy and workshops, visit www.diversityunity.com. If you have questions, comments, suggestions for topics or guests to cover on the podcast, don't hesitate to contact us. See you in a couple of weeks.